The Island Digest is a sampling of the stories in this week's Journal of the San Juans, Islands Sounder, and Islands Weekly, which are on newsstands now. The October 12th edition is brought to you by Orcas Island Healthcare District. I'm Caleb Summers. Headlines from the week of October 12th, 2022. Caillou Channel renamed. Ferry Advisory Committee and County Council discuss ferry woes. Lobos Volleyball on a roll. Orcas man arrested after allegedly breaking into home and fleeing. Plus, choice excerpts from the sheriff's log. From the Islands Sounder, Caillou Channel renamed. By Toby Cooper. They came from every direction, from Orcas hamlets and mainland ports as far as Tacoma. They came by lumbering ferry and graceful Samish canoe. They came with joy, savoring the morning sunshine, blending their voices in enchanting traditional resonance and basking in the rich Native American culture that is so alive in San Juan County. They came to bless the quiet inland waters between Orcas and Shaw, now and forever to be known as Caillou Channel, on October 2nd. We live on former Harney Channel, and I didn't think much of the name until I happened to read The Oregon Trail by Rinker Buck, said retired biologist Ken Carrasco, who spearheaded the 3-year effort to rename the 2-mile strait. Rinker's book includes a graphic account of Brigadier General William Harney's attack on a village of Brule Sioux in 1855. Carrasco was hooked. He scrounged everywhere for sources, finding The Pig War, Standoff at Griffin Bay by Mike Vorey, and a published PhD thesis, General William S. Harney, Prince of Dragoons by George Raleigh Adams. The more I read, the more the measure of the man emerged, he said. There were a number of incidents recorded by credible sources which could be considered crimes against humanity. Despite his history of atrocities, Harney's name comes up frequently on maps of the U.S. In Oregon, there is a peak, a county, and a lake. There's a street in Omaha, a sports complex in Kansas, a river in Everglades National Park, and more. Why do we honor this man? Carrasco wondered. Ultimately, he looked out his back window across the channel towards Shaw and said, "This has got to change." Teamed with friend Stephanie Buffum, they leveraged that aha moment into a public campaign and made something wonderful happen on Orcas Island. Renaming the channel to honor Henry Thomas Caillou was an easy decision. The man was a beacon of leadership, entrepreneurial energy, and public service throughout his life. Born in 1869 to a Lummi Saanich mother and French-American father, Caillou lived much of his island life as a commercial fisherman, fishing the way his ancestors did. He and his family owned a cannery, a steam-powered tugboat, and a 500-acre farm on Decatur. Caillou joined a school board, became a postmaster, and more, always looking to help his community. By 1897, he was serving as county road supervisor on Orcas. He plotted out road number 1, now called Deer Harbor Road, said Councilmember Cindy Wolf, noting further that Caillou was elected to the council himself in 1906, before Native Americans had the right to vote. He served for 29 years. And neither last nor least, Caillou founded San Juan County's first electrical cooperative, Orcas Power Company, now called Opelco. Caillou died in 1959, leaving behind dozens of adoring relatives. Direct Caillou descendant and former Orcas postmaster Donna McNeil said it best. "I was born and raised on these waters, fishing with my grandpa. We always called this our home waters, she said. McNeil and Rosie Caillou, Henry's great-niece and McNeil's great-aunt, led a Sunday ceremony to bless the waters. Perhaps the best is yet to come. Henry's multicultural parentage seems to have set in motion a powerful sense of family that persists to this day. Represented at the celebration were the Samish, the Swinomish, the Upper Skagit, and Mitchell Bay tribes. Canoe Captain Sam Barr brought the Samish canoe from Lopez, but they gathered as a family. The day belonged to family. From the Journal of the San Juan Islands, Ferry Advisory Committee and County Council Discuss Ferry Woes, by Heather Spaulding. A slew of ferry service interruptions that have seriously impacted residents led to a special meeting between the San Juan County Council and the Ferry Advisory Committee on October 6th at 9 a.m. The room was packed with island students who listened to the proceedings. It will get better, said FAC Chair Jim Corinman. But it will take from 1 to 3 years to fully resolve the staff problem and from 5 to 10 years before the boat problem is solved. Corinman and FAC member Ken Burtness both told the council they believed the Washington State Ferries have made great strides in addressing a decrease in staffing. It's a long process that does not happen overnight, Burtness said, but WSF is on a very good path to correct the problem through things like funding for training. Burtness noted that he worked for the ferries in the 1970s and into the 90s during what he called the Golden Age. There was a surplus of trained employees in that era. In 1999, the passage of Tim Eymann's Initiative 695 repealed the state's motor vehicle excise tax, which had provided billions of dollars for Washington's transportation system, including ferries. According to Burtness, although a fix was put in place, the ferry system never recovered from the loss of funding. This year was the first time in decades that Congress has adequately funded ferries, Corinman said, adding that Senators Alex Rammell and Liz Lovelett have been incredibly supportive and were instrumental in getting that funding passed. The bigger looming issue is the lack of vessels. In 2019, WSF wrote a long-range plan that projected the need for 26 more boats by 2040. Currently, the state is in a slow process of looking at contracts. The process was delayed after Vigor, who was contracted to design the new fleet, gave its lowest bid, which was significantly higher than what WSF had estimated. WSF is mandated to find a contractor in the state to build the ferries, unless none of the offers come below 5% of the estimated cost. The good news is that they will probably find a better price. The bad news is the money will not go back into Washington, Corinman explained. If things stay on track, the first of 5 new boats should arrive in 2027, but the project is already 5 years behind schedule. However, factoring in the age of today's fleet, the first 5 boats will go toward replacing aging vessels. The Tillicum is 63 years old, Corinman said. She was only expected to last until she was 60. They want to retire the Issaquah class at 50 years old, and that is coming up in just a few years. We will be stuck with a boat shortage for the foreseeable future. The long-range plan calls for 26 boats by 2040, and even if there was a boat built every year, there would only be 23 boats by 2040. We're going to be short on boats essentially forever, Burtness said. Meanwhile, students are left trying to get to school and home and participate in sporting events. It has been a big problem. Ava Dahl, who lives on Orcas Island and is in her 4th year at Spring Street International School on San Juan Island, told the Journal, "Some days I ask myself, should I even go today?" Julia Van Dongen, also an Orcus resident who has attended Spring Street for the last 4 years, echoed Dahl's sentiments. If the boats don't leave on time, we miss the first half hour of class or more, depending on how late it is, she said. Van Dongen also said occasionally students have hitched a ride with a commercial whale watch boat or private vessel. Gas is expensive, she pointed out, and that expense should not come out of the student's pocket. As winter weather approaches, smaller boats are not an option either. Once we were riding a whale watch boat over to San Juan and there was a private boat in front of us, we all watched as huge waves crashed over its bow. It isn't safe for us during the winter, Van Dongen explained. Rudy Roche lives on Lopez Island and also commutes to Spring Street School. Like Van Dongen and Dahl, ferry service disruptions have left him unable to get to school. Roche plays soccer, meaning he also struggles to get to practice and games. Roche uses the Washington State Ferry app on his phone, but it does not help. It's kind of a mess. Once it showed the boat was on Lopez when it was on San Juan, it doesn't always show the correct schedule, said Roche, who is encouraging WSF to improve it. Van Dongen is also into sports and says, either we have to forfeit by not being able to get there, or we go and then can't get home. In addition, she has medical issues that require her to go to the mainland. By not wanting to risk taking later ferries, these commuting students also miss out on extra study time. Spring Street has an after-school study program called Flex, which gives students one-on-one time with their teachers. We generally don't feel like we can attend them because we may not get home, Dahl said. I want to learn. I want to get to school, have basic transportation resources, a reliable ferry system. Right now, we aren't able to depend on it, and that breaks down trust. Councilmember Cindy Wolf also called for reliability from WSF. The killer is the unpredictability, Wolf said. Workers don't even know where the next ferry is going. They didn't even know what sign to put in. I watched them change the sign 4 times. Korenman understood, but also pointed out that if, for example, WSF shut down the Mukilteo run and moved those resources to the San Juans, people who live in Mukilteo would have a lot to say. I'm not asking for more, Wolf said. You heard me, right? I'm not asking for more. I am asking for accountability and reliability. If the county can do something, like create a ferry district, I would like to know what resources WSF is able to provide and what gaps need to be filled. The Ferry Advisory Committee is holding 2 outreach meetings via Zoom. The first is October 15th at 9 a.m., and the second is October 18th at 6 p.m. Please visit sanjuanjournal.com for more information about how to attend those meetings. From the Islands Weekly, Lobos Volleyball on a Roll, by Jean Helfman. The Lady Lobos put their undefeated 9-0 record on the line against Shoreline Christian September 30th before a large and enthusiastic home crowd. Things started slowly in the best-of-5 match, with the Shoreline Chargers jumping out to a lead that grew to 12-8, many of Shoreline's points coming on serving errors by Lopez. The Lobos overcame their apparent early game jitters and tied things at 15-15, then went on to win 25-21. The second game found Lopez coasting to a relatively easy win, 25-12. The third game was much closer, the lead changing hands several times, and the game tied at 9-9 and 15-15. Forced errors by either team were few, leading to a number of long rallies. Strong serving by Lopez closed out the game at 25-20, allowing Lopez to sweep the match 3-0. Coach Marina Steinbrook had nothing but praise for her athletes afterward. She said they had practiced hard in preparation all week, anticipating a close contest. Those expectations translated into nervousness early on, as shown by the serving errors in the first game. But once the Lady Lobos settled down and played their game, Coach Steinbrück said they came together as a team and played up to their ability. Lopez Volleyball has home matches against league co-leader Grace October 3rd, followed by contests on October 20th and 21st. In county news, Orcas man arrested after allegedly breaking into home and fleeing, by Colleen Smith Summers. Matthew Edward Huffstadt, 33, of Deer Harbor, was apprehended by sheriff's deputies on October 2nd, 3 days after he allegedly broke into a home, brandished a knife at a police officer, and ran away into the woods. His arraignment in San Juan County Superior Court is scheduled for October 10th. He is accused of burglary, possessing stolen property, resisting arrest, and having a weapon capable of producing bodily harm. On October 3rd, Judge Catherine Loring set his bail at $50,000. On September 29th at 8:30 p.m., officers responded to a residence on Harborview Lane on Orcas Island for a report of a burglary in progress. Via a surveillance camera, the owner could see someone with a flashlight inside his garage, which is under construction. The arriving deputy observed a pickup truck with its tailgate open and a large table saw hanging out of the back. He also noticed the garage door was halfway open. The deputy removed his department-issued patrol rifle and exited his vehicle, approaching the truck. Huffstadt then exited the garage and walked towards him. The deputy identified himself and told the suspect to keep his hands visible and place them on the hood of the truck. Huffstadt did not comply, walked to the driver's side door, and placed his right hand in his jacket pocket. According to the deputy's report, "I pointed my rifle at Huffstadt and ordered him to keep his hand out of his pocket. Huffstadt pulled his hand out of his jacket pocket, and I saw he was holding a large fixed-blade knife with a red handle. Huffstadt began to turn toward me, and I ordered him at gunpoint to drop the knife. Huffstadt raised the knife up and displayed it in the air. The deputy ordered the suspect to stop multiple times, and he refused to comply. He then ran away, at which point the officer chased him, stopping after going about 50 feet into the woods. I was concerned for my safety at that point due to the lack of light and heavily wooded, unfamiliar terrain," he wrote. More police officers arrived to search the area, and Orcas Island Assistant Fire Chief Holly Van Schaik used a thermal imager, but the suspect was not located. Huffstadt's truck at the crime scene was impounded. After obtaining a search warrant, police found his truck was full of power and hand tools taken from the garage. Sheriff Ron Krebs asked the public to assist in apprehending Huffstadt, and after a citizen's tip on October 2nd, he was arrested without incident in East Sound. Huffstadt has a pending case in Whatcom County, where he is accused of reckless endangerment after a 13-month-old girl in his care ingested methamphetamine. A jury trial is set for December 5th, 2022. And now, a few choice excerpts from the San Juan County Sheriff's log. On September 29th, a San Juan deputy responded to a report of a hit-and-run involving a fire hydrant. The owner of the vehicle called the collision in several hours later, saying they swerved to miss a deer, but did not remember the collision. Alcohol or drug use is suspected, but probable cause could not be developed. On October 1st, a deputy on Orcas responded to a fraud complaint. An elderly person sent several thousand dollars to an unidentified suspect in a bail money scam. Note from the sheriff's office: if you are contacted to bail out a loved one, please stop and verify the circumstances. This is a very common tactic used by scammers. On October 2nd, a deputy on San Juan responded to a report of fraud involving someone who had reportedly attempted to use fake money in the last week. The incident was not reported at the time of use, however. The store wanted the sheriff's office to be aware that someone in town was using fake money in town. A deputy took a report of flyers posted around Friday Harbor with an image of the reporting party's dogs on it. Currently, there is no suspect information or workable leads. On October 3rd, a deputy on Orcas responded to a civil dispute involving access to water from a shared well. The deputy contacted the involved parties and completed a report. On October 4th, a deputy took a report of fraud on San Juan. The victim let their partner borrow their debit card, and the partner does not remember making a purchase of approximately $30. The person wanted to report that there might be a credit card skimmer on the island. This concludes the October 12th edition of the Island Digest. This edition is brought to you by Orcas Island Healthcare District, which provides financial support to Island Health Primary Care Orcas. After-hours care for those in need of medical services is available by calling 360-376-2561. For more information, visit orcashealth.org/afterhours. Thank you for listening to the Island Digest, a small sampling of what's in your local print newspapers this week. The Journal, Sounder, and Weekly rely upon advertising, subscriptions, and donations to support our mission of high-quality community journalism. To contribute, visit our websites or email publisher Colleen Smith-Summers at csmith@soundpublishing.com. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in again next week for more local news from San Juan County, Washington. My name is Caleb Summers.